Stephen Fry is known to most of us as a star of stage in both the large and small screen. He's a brilliant actor, comedian who's entertained and made us laugh and cry for many years. But the other side to Stephen Fry is the fact that he now talks openly about that he's suffered with a mental illness for much of his life. He's been suicidal as a young man, but was only properly diagnosed with bipolar disorder in his late 30s. He's now a staunch advocate for mental health and was recently appointed president of the charitable UK mental health support agency Mind. Stephen Fry, thank you for taking some time to talk to Regional Australia about this. I'm sure you're aware of the figures. We have got suicide is killing more young Australians than
it's terrible.
Road crashes.
And under that, the relatively new phenomenon of self-harm amongst teenagers, which is a kind of road towards suicide, if you like, is part of that whole cloud of suicidal ideation that seems to hang over so many young people. And there are all kinds of excuses people try and make or reasons they give. Or to me, that's almost not important. It's the fact that there are people in real pain now. The first thing you have to get out of the way is that the major problem, really, those come often as a result as much of public stigma. If you live in a society where being able to talk about, being able to be honest, to be able to show your face, having your friends know that you have a tendency sometimes towards mood swings, that you have a mood disorder, if you can't really do that without shame, then it tends to make it all the more likely that there is, it narrows the exits until there's only one exit, which is the exit from which there's no return.
So how hard was it for you as a public figure? How hard to initially talk about the fact that you did have a mental, or to even to take the first step and seek help and admit to yourself that you had a problem?
Well, it was less hard for me than it may be for others, because one, I'd had a similar journey, which was that I'd been open about my sexuality, which is a parallel kind of thing. I mean, you know, indeed, the Diagnostical and Statistical Manual, the famed DSM, which defines, you know, certainly from America, and it has a huge influence around the world, defines the nature of mental illnesses, which is extremely important for insurance and legal reasons, you know. I mean, I think it was only in the second or third edition of the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual that homosexuality was decided not to be a disease. So it's clearly it's a work in progress. The point is, we know more about, to be honest, the first 5 seconds of the creation of the universe than we know about the human brain.
You mentioned homophobia, and I wanted to ask specifically about that because there is no doubt it remains rife in smaller regional communities.
Yeah.
What would your direct advice be to young gay men and women who might be trying to come to terms with who they are in that sort of environment?
Yeah. Well, it's really difficult. I grew up in the deepest country in England. Obviously, the deepest country in England is never as remote as the deepest country in Australia. But I, you know, was far enough. We had to have a mobile library. And would come once every 2 weeks. And for me, there was no internet. Gay was not a word that was used. Homosexuality was never seen on television. There were no role models. At the age of 10, I happened to see a film of The Importance of Being Earnest, and I was so completely captivated by the language. I mean, utterly transported. When I first heard Algernon say, "Would you be offended if I said that you seem to me to be in every way the visible personification of absolute perfection?" I thought, I shivered and writhed as if I'd discovered a whole new something. Mm. So when the mobile library came, I said, "Have you heard of someone called Oscar Wilde?" The librarian said, "Yes, dear." And I said,
"She wasn't getting too many requests for it around the regional tracks."
And I said, "Do you have a play of his called The Importance of Being Earnest?" Because I'd seen this film. And she said, "Well, what we've got is that." And it was the Complete Works. So I took the Complete Works and I read everything. Then I read the story of Oscar. And to read of this extraordinary gentle giant being struck down at the time he was and living out a life of utter exile, misery, shame, disgrace, and dying a tragic, hopeless death, probably thinking he'd never be regarded as anything other again than a monster and a depraved being, it was so heartbreaking. But of course, it made me I then had to read books about people who knew Oscar, and I'd read and read and read until I knew about the lives of every gay writer and painter and artist who had ever lived. And so I had, on the one hand, the sense that I was not alone, and not only was I not alone, but some of the best people who ever lived shared my sexual nature. And it's the same with mental health in that sense. It's important to know that there are people out there who can have successful, fulfilled lives who are gay, and that they should be a role model for you. And of course, if you're gay and you're living in, I don't know, in somewhere, you know, 30 miles outside Cairns, you know, you're going to think, well, it's easy for you to say,
yes,
in the middle
of
Melbourne.
Else.
How the hell am I going to get to Melbourne for a start? And if the local football team think I'm a gay, you know, what are they going to do? They're going to put me in trash cans and kick me around, and, you know, especially if I'm an effeminate gay, you know, especially. And you know, the fact is, Australia's great intellectuals most of them thought they were gay because they lived in an ochre cut. Most of them weren't. Mm. I mean, Patrick Wright, okay, he was. But Clive James, Michael Blakemore, Robert Hughes, Jermaine Greer, mm. you know, these sort of people. And the filmmakers, Fred Skepsi or whatever, Peter Carey, you know, they grew up in an era where they were so uninterested in sport. that their father
must
said
be
to them,
different.
"You're not a man. You're not a man." Yeah, and so they couldn't wait to get away. And it's a slow change. But I mean, Australia is a, you know, you've got much to be proud of. You've got you know, an MP who's in a gay relationship with an adopted child or born child to her. I think
yes,
that's right.
They're having a baby.
There was no fuss made of that. It was a natural thing. Mm. I mean, this is the land of the fair shake.
We're getting there.
You know, and the land of the fair shake should you know you fair yeah. shake with the genes you've been dealt with.
We are privileged to have Stephen Fry with us, and I know I can't keep you for too much longer, but you've also fronted the Get It Off Your Chest campaign. Now, when we talk about suicide, 76% of suicides are male, and it's blokes mm. who most have trouble talking about their issues. How do we change that attitude?
I suppose if it is people like me and talking about it and talking about admitting it and consistently repeating the numbers of the various lines, you know, that you can call mm. and websites you can visit where there are people who will listen, who are not corrupt or perverted, who are genuinely just there to listen and to understand, and because probably a lot of them have been there themselves, and so they know the value of talking. Find an anonymous friend, you know, on the internet that you can just, you know, be and make, if you like, make an anonymous character of yourself on the internet. And I remember as a teacher, I did this once. I was only a teacher for a very short time, and we had a very rainy weekend, big surprise in England, and I was the master in charge. It was a boarding school. It was the year before I went to university, so I was the junior master. So I had all the boys inside, and I did various quizzes and paper games and entertainments and things to try and then I said, okay, everyone has to write a one-page description of themselves as accurate as possible, except every sentence in it must be a lie, right? And so most of them were like, I was born on the planet Venus, mm. and, you know, I'm green. And
I have superpowers, you know, no doubt.
Exactly. But one boy wrote this letter that, I mean, absolutely knocked me for six. I'm a very happy boy. My mummy and daddy love me very much. My brothers and sisters are nice to me. All my friends are kind to me. It was like, mm. oh, my goodness.
How bad must
it was
must
the final proof. You know, the proof is if it's fiction that tells the truth. Mm. And he could never have said, if I'd said, write the truth about yourself, he'd never have done it. And so, of course, I showed it to the headmaster. He said, we've got to see his parents. We've got to show this to his mother. And his mother burst into tears and said, his father, you know, his father and I are going through a terrible time. He's a drinker and he's this and he's abusive. And, you know, mm. and we did discover that there was a miserable home life behind this. And so one of the things that I'm not encouraging, you know, people to go around having false identities on the internet necessarily, but you can, you know, but almost by a sort of fictional practice, as it were. If you don't have to be able to write a novel, but you can invent a new person who is the you that you'd like to be, and practice them on the internet. Practice being them. Just give themselves, you know, this is the fake me at gmail.com and on Twitter, and just see how it
Find
goes.
Find a way to talk
Find
about
a
it.
Way and to be more.
What
confident.
I take from that was that you also gave him an opportunity to tell his story. So if you're living with someone who you think might be suffering, find a way to ask them or to get them to express what they're feeling. Yeah. Stephen Fry, can I thank you sincerely for taking the time to speak with us, especially on behalf of the people you may have helped. Thank you.